Two USU professors are currently in the middle of publishing four research articles that look at women and minorities in high-ranking positions in the workplace.
Christy Glass, I'm Associate Professor of Sociology at Utah State.
And I'm Allison Cook, and I'm an Associate Professor in the Management Department in the Huntsman School of Business.
Glass and Cook may come from very different backgrounds, but their research interests converged on the study of women and minorities in the workplace. Many previous studies have asked why this group of people get stuck near the bottom of their companies. Instead, Cook and Glass asked the opposite question.
We wanted to look at under what conditions are women and minorities appointed to very top leadership positions, and then what happens after they're appointed.
Cook and Glass described two phenomena in their research, the glass cliff, which is a near relative of the glass ceiling, and the savior effect.
And other scholars had proposed this notion of the glass cliff with regard to women, namely that when women are appointed, they're much more likely to be appointed to firms that are struggling or at risk to fail. Well, we wanted to expand that or to go further with that. First, we wanted to see whether this theory is relevant to racial minorities as well. And we wanted to see across different contexts, the NCAA as well as Fortune 500 CEOs. And we wanted to see what happens afterward, because if it's in fact true that women and racial minorities are more likely to be appointed to struggling organizations, then it seems probable that their leadership experience will be plagued as well. So we wanted to look not just at their promotion, but at their post-promotion trajectory.
In their research, Glass and Cook compared top non-traditional leaders with white male leaders. They looked at how well a company was doing at the time of transition and what happened to the CEO in the company after the transition occurred.
And so we were able to conclude that women and racial minorities are more likely to be appointed when there has been weak prior performance, either in terms of win-loss records or in terms of the performance of the organization. So the second process we tested was the savior effect. And what we looked at there was what happens after the non-traditional leaders appointed in terms of performance. And what we found is even performance declines in the short term can put non-traditional leaders at significant risk of being replaced by white men, even if those non-traditional leaders were appointed to struggling firms in the first place. This suggests to us that women and racial ethnic minorities aren't given very many degrees of freedom to prove their leadership capability, and then they're blamed for the struggle or the crisis, and then replaced by a corporate savior. This is risky. This is risky for their career, but it's also risky for our perception about the leadership ability of non-traditional leaders, because if in these high-profile cases we have women or minorities blamed for a firm struggle and replaced, that risks confirming our biases that these weren't really good leaders in the first place and probably shouldn't have been appointed.
The researchers say that because of the rarity of women and minorities in these high-powered positions, the media may spotlight their work, making it seem to the general public that this group of people should not be leaders because they are generally depicted as leading a failing company.
You know, within our 15-year study of the Fortune 500, we had 57 occupational minorities only transition, where we had 551 transitions of white males. So it is an extremely rare occurrence. There's one that just sort of stands out as both glass cliff and savior effect happening within one company. Toys R Us is, I think, it's a terrific example.
Cook says that during the late 90s, Toys R Us started faltering. The founding CEO stepped down and was replaced by Michael Goldstein. Goldstein was given 4 years to turn the company around, but when the value of the company kept falling, he was replaced by an Asian man, Robert Nakasone. Unlike Goldstein, Nakasone was given only 1.5 years to save the company. In 1999, Nakasone abruptly resigned. Cook says that no one really knows if he was forced out or whether he stepped down. But after his resignation, Goldstein showed up again as the CEO to act as the savior of the company. Cook says that some people working under Nakasone say that Goldstein actually kept a lot of the strategies that Nakasone had created during his short time as CEO.
But at the time, the board was saying, who's going to get blamed for this declining performance? So here it was, a really faltering, struggling company. They put in an Asian man, give him 1.5 years only, and then they bring back in sort of the corporate savior.
I asked Glass what she thought we should do now that we realize this is happening.
I think most organizations have done a great deal to increase diversity at lower levels. And the way that they've done that is by formalizing the recruitment and hiring process, those same processes haven't moved to the very top. So applying some of those human resource practices, I think, could do a lot to increase good leadership opportunities for women and minorities.
Some of their research has shown that companies with diverse boards are more likely to appoint non-traditional leaders. The researchers also say that women and minorities who do make it to the top are truly exceptional leaders.
You know, when they're getting to the ranks of this position as female or minorities, not only are they exceptional next to other females and minorities, they're exceptional next to all leaders.
Cook and Glass say that they will continue to combine their backgrounds in sociology and management to better understand these trends and how to fix them. With Utah Public Radio, I'm Elaine Taylor.